This is the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. We're kicking off 2024 with a preview of key moments from the episodes you'll hear this winter, featuring international thought leaders, trendsetters, and changemakers. And we'll start with neuroscientist Bo Lotto. Bo teaches organizations how to apply scientific truths about perception to adapt and thrive in an ever-changing world. Here's a clip of Bo and Steve on creating a successful workplace culture.
You touched on things like workforce attraction, job satisfaction,
culture
change, transformation for some organizations. And so there may be some people listening to this who are thinking, you know, Bo's nailed it. Yeah, I get that. But where do they then go? How do they start? I mean, you know, you talk about working with leaders, for instance. How important is it to have that buy-in for what you're talking about from the very top of an organization versus anything else?
I think it's really important to have buy-in from the leaders, first of all, because their impact and their way of being is nonlinear.
Right.
Because they're connected so much. So how they are will impact much more strongly than, say, another person. So it's very important that they have that buy-in. But that buy-in actually has to be at a personal level as well. This is why when we talk to, like, your group here, I try to emphasize that this is a way of being at work, but it's also a way of being in your life. That you don't just switch this on when you walk through the doors of ISF or the security company that you're working for or Google or whatever it might be. This is how you live your life. Because if you can also engage people at the personal level, then you give them that desire to want to. Because often, you know, I can say, no matter how wonderful what I might say, what other people might say, and you might say, oh, that's brilliant, no one's going to do it until they actually want to. So it's giving them that want to, and that want to has to come from very much a personal side. So when we think about buying in, it's not just buying at the business level. You want the buy-in from the leadership, but also the leaders want to embrace this as their way of being. And from that, then that can contribute significantly to creating that culture. The culture emerges from that interaction. You can't create the culture. In the same way, you can't create a whirlpool. A whirlpool emerges from the interaction of water molecules. But what you're doing is you're specifying how are we going to interact. What are our laws of physics that determine our relationship?
Right.
If, for instance, if our aim is efficiency, a very good strategy is competition. That's a very good strategy in nature, is to facilitate competition. A very bad idea if you want to create creativity. Because if we have a competitive environment, then every time we have an interaction, it's going to be, I'm going to withhold, I'm not going to ask a question, I'm not going to reveal things I don't know.
Right.
That's going to emerge into a very individualistic, kill or be killed kind of environment. Some people might love that, right? It's not a very sustainable environment. So that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to say, what are our internal laws of physics? How are we going to interact with each other? And then you can actually assess people according to that interaction. Were you curious? Were you compassionate? Were you courageous, not confident? That becomes a way of actually both hiring, but also measuring. And then you can actually track the consequence over time of the company and the individuals. It also increases the well-being of the people. They just actually feel better. And then you have a more, you know, now people want to come into work and they're more willing to come into work because they're feeling better at work, where we spend so much of our time.
We'll bring you a deep dive into quantum computing with leading expert Konstantinos Karagiannis. What future threats does quantum pose?
You talk there about some things that clearly security people are always concerned about, you know, things like threats, bad actors. Do they have access to quantum computing as well?
Some of them definitely do. So right now, most attacks are in the form of harvest now, decrypt later.
Right.
We're all focused, the bad actors are focused on gathering packets, depending on their source. And the hope is that when a quantum computer reaches that power level in, let's say, 10 years, some of those secrets might be relevant. State secrets, corporate secrets. If you were to send Coca-Cola over the wire in 10 years, you'd have quantum Coca-Cola, you know, when it's decrypted. Yeah. But some secrets don't matter. Like a credit card that's captured now, who cares? 5 years even, it's not worth anything. So that's that general progression of attack. But we also are worried about, like, what those actors are. And if they are a nation state, like, let's say, China, we know for a fact China is publishing more scientific papers on quantum than any other country. And they've also passed that magical threshold in science of being cited more often. So you'll find Chinese papers being cited more often than other countries, too. That means clearly they're doing very well in quantum technology. So it's feasible that if China, being the structure it is now, where the government does tend to have access to a lot of the technology, they should have access to a cryptographically relevant quantum computer at some point.
We'll bring you timely episodes with veteran journalist Nick Witchell, who questions Steve about where business leaders should focus as they navigate geopolitics and their influence on the world economy.
What are the areas that business leaders, leaders of multinational organizations, all of whom are going to be affected by these considerations, what are the areas specifically that they should be looking at and focusing on?
I think you have to have an overall perspective, first of all, on your business landscape. So where are you doing business? Which parts of the world? How might you be affected in those parts? Now, if you're running a very large multinational, of course, you're going to have significant amounts of people on the ground who are able to provide you with that input, that feedback. But you have to take that country-by-country perspective to it, I think. Then I think I come back to the supply chain. You have to have a very clear idea of where the different component pieces are going to be coming from and the impact on that of any form of conflict. You may want to look for alternative sourcing. So we've seen quite a lot of that, for instance, bringing things back onshore, people who have outsourced into a safer, in inverted commas, type environment, or one over which you have slightly more control rather than where you don't have that level of control. I think the other piece that is really important that perhaps some people quite often forget is the impact on the customer base. Because it may well be that if you have a particularly large and significant amount of orders coming from one part of the world and that suddenly stops, that can have a very significant impact on your ability to continue as a business. At the very least, you're going to have to be informing your stakeholders. If you're a public company, you probably need to be making some form of statement to the markets. So all of those sorts of things I think you need to take into account. But again, it is about doing it in a measured way. There's no need to panic. It is about controlling what you can control and then moving from there.
Steve will discuss artificial intelligence with leading expert Nina Schick. Here, they talk about the potential impact of AI on the lives and work of citizens around the world.
A lot of the things that we're talking about are going to have a direct impact, aren't they, on people, whether or not it's because they are using the technology, being displaced by the technology, seeing more opportunity via the technology, or just being completely divorced from the technology, I guess.
I think it's very difficult to be divorced from the technology, right? I mean, you can make that choice, but it's extremely difficult because is it really a choice? If you say you want to be divorced from technology, you know, you can choose to, you know, go off grid, you know, live deep in the Amazon, but how much of a choice is that really for most people? So I think it's fair to say that the vast majority of the population of the world is going to be impacted by these technologies, of which artificial intelligence is just kind of the latest layer. But with regards to everything else, I mean, it's going to fundamentally redraft, you know, the way not only that we live, but the way that we work. And one of the things that is most exciting for kind of a lot of the big tech companies that are now developing the foundational models that are at the cutting edge of artificial intelligence development is how it's going to reshape the enterprise, right? Again, if you take it back to now AI has these capabilities and there's this huge debate about whether or not it's actually intelligent, whether it can actually understand, whether it's actually sentient. So putting that debate aside for a second and just understanding that the way that it can augment knowledge work and the way that it can actually further human knowledge and intelligence means that once it's implemented into workflows and processes, it's going to change the way that we work. And there's going to be huge kind of economic value associated with that as well. So it's not only that it's, you know, happening at the level of high geopolitics in the context of national security or economic growth, it's also happening in the enterprise. And then finally, this layer of how this technology is being democratized and becoming accessible to billions of citizens around the world as well. A good kind of comparison is the internet itself.
Steve will speak with Randy Jackson, an American high school football coach who moved to Germany to coach the Potsdam Royals football team. Coach Jackson will share career advice about the importance of communication, influence, and mentorship.
Well, I want to move away from the team so much now, Randy, and look at you or fellow coaches. So you consult, obviously, with a network of coaches. How important is it, do you think, to maintain such a network, you know, to have these kinds of relationships with colleagues with similar goals and expertise as you?
Oh, I think it's vital. Like, I mean, I love the term mastermind. And when I Google mastermind, I think it was like Henry Ford and Rockefeller and just icons of the early 1900s. I think Teddy Roosevelt might have even been a part of this. And they would meet once a year, and their businesses had nothing to do with each other, but winners are winners. And so I believe you should find like-minded people. I think we're all the average of our top five friends. So I tell that to my players all the time. You're going to be 2.5. And if you want to be a millionaire, you need to hang out with millionaires. So the best thing I've done in my consulting is start WhatsApp groups where people can communicate with each other and bounce things off of each other. I've got Hall of Fame coaches, and I've got 22-year-old coaches who barely, you know, they're just starting. Well, they can access these Hall of Fame veterans through our WhatsApp and chat. And so I think it's a big deal of you must have ways for people to communicate with each other. And if you're not growing, you're dying. And so find people who are successful and take them to lunch, ask questions, and talk as little as you can. You know, that's my philosophy.
We'll hear from neuroscientist Tali Sherratt, who shares with Steve some of her extensive research on optimism bias, including how it can help security professionals better communicate their message.
One thing that we can take away from our research is that it's helpful to reframe the message. So usually when we try to talk to people about risk, we highlight the negative events that can happen in the future. Mm-hmm. If you don't do this, if you don't take these actions, these negative events will happen, right? Security breaches and all of that.
Yeah.
But our studies show people don't take negative information about the future as well as they should. So you can reframe the message and say, well, if you do this, A, B, and C, then you will remain quite secure, right? Then mm-hmm. you will save time, you will save money. So highlighting what needs to be done to get to the positive outcome, the goal. So instead of focusing on the potential negative outcome, actually reframing the message, it's the same content, it's the same message, but it is reframed to highlight what you need to do to get to the positive goal, which in fact is what a security officer wants, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They want to get to this positive goal, which is you save money, you save time, you're in a safe position. But automatically our intuition is kind of to make the negative salient.
And we'll bring you a new conversation with innovator Peter Hinson. Peter hasn't been in touch with Steve since before COVID, so they meet again for a wide-ranging discussion, including the impact of the pandemic on work.
Have you seen anything that businesses have kept that's been really positive that perhaps they wouldn't have been able to do if we hadn't had that whole COVID situation?
Well, I think what was really interesting about COVID is that I think when it was going on, a lot of people thought, this is the big one. Mm-hmm. And let's hope that, you know, post-pandemic, you know, if we ever get out, we're going to go back to the way it was.
Right.
And I think that has been abandoned. And of course, we all know what happened. Post-pandemic, we've got into the war in Ukraine, and then we've got into the economy that went just absolutely nuts, and then, you know, inflation. And it just seems to be constantly more and more and more change that has happened. Mm. And I think fundamentally, I think companies have started to realize that they need to understand that, that we're not going to go back to peace and quiet.
Right.
We're going to have an acceleration maybe of change. And that's what I started calling the never normal. One of the good things I think that we've gotten back from COVID, or that we've retained from COVID, is that I think the acceleration of the future of work has really happened. I think we're now seeing companies that clearly see that the way we did, you know, HR, employment, and work pre-pandemic, we can't just hope that that is going to come back. And I think that is a fundamental change that I think was really something that the pandemic helped us with.
We'll bring you all the full conversations and great episodes all year long on the ISF podcast. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org and become an ISF member today. Don't miss the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. And don't forget to rate and review us. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox Productions and Tavia Gilbert, with senior producer Katie Flood. Additional support from Mandy Morish, Oscar Falk, and Brian Wilson. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Mix and master by Kayla Elrod. Thanks for listening.